for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
From the ninth chapter of Ecclesiastes, we hear, "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might." Holy and gracious God, we know that you sanctify each day with your blessings, so that all our business is a holy business at all hours and in all places. We pray that what we are about to do this week will be uncommon, and you will turn our efforts into spiritual adventures. Bless us and guide us so that it may be so with us, and you will honor our work. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones,
Senator from Lawrence, Senator from the 10th, Senator from Lewis, Senator from the 2nd, Senator from Green, Senator from Andrew. The quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 50.
Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion as shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I have two very special groups. The first one is a larger group to my left and your right. They're from a very special place. It's called the Rich Hill Development Center in Rich Hill. And they came all the way up this morning, had to wake up at 5 o'clock this morning to be here. And as you can see, the handsome young men over there, they're under the direction of Mark Bell, Clayton Lyons, Jim Kithcart, Don Overton, Brendan McCowan, and Eric Phillips. And if they would please stand for the Rich Hill Development Center.
Let's welcome these guests of the Senator from Johnson to the Missouri Senate. Senator from Buchanan.
It is my pleasure to introduce to the Senate Dr. Bob Patterson, who is a child psychiatrist at Children's Mercy Hospital. And he's serving as our Doctor of the Day, and I would hope the Senate would make him welcome.
Let's welcome our Doctor of the Day to the Missouri Senate. Thank you, sir. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have another group I'd like to introduce, and they are with the Katy Trail Community Health. They are headquartered out of Pettis County, and so also the senator from Polk is their guest as well. And they are Hollis Hensley, Marie Payne Bowman, Linda Messenger, and Chris Stewart here, and they're advocating on behalf of the great people they serve.
Let's welcome these guests of the senator from Johnson. Senator from Boone.
Mr. President, up in the gallery today, I'm happy to introduce 22 individuals associated with the Donate Life Missouri program. Donate Life Missouri is a partnership between the state's organ and tissue procurement organizations and the state of Missouri to encourage Missourians to join the organ and tissue donor registry. Members visiting today include the two organ procurement agencies, Midwest Transplant Services and Midwest Transplant Network, along with the Lions Eye Bank, the Governor's Organ Donation Advisory Committee, and employees of the Department of Health and Senior Services, the Missouri Kidney Program, the Gift for Life, and the Kansas City-based Donation Awareness Charity. I'd ask the body make them feel welcome today.
Let's welcome these guests to the Missouri Senate. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine, the county administrator for St. Charles County, and one of our great former appropriations chairs of the Missouri Senate. Senator Chuck Gross is here on my left and your right.
We're delighted to welcome our former colleague and my former roommate, Senator Gross. Further introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business. Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 439.
Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 439. The senator from Stoddard.
And I move that Senate Bill number 439 with the Senate committee substitute be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. As many as are the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us. And the senator from the 11th has the floor. Senator.
Hired to be senator from Jefferson.
Does the senator from Jefferson yield for inquiry? I do not see. Okay, the senator over on the door, you're being asked to yield for inquiry to the senator from the 11th.
I yield.
Proceed, Mr. President.
Sorry about that. I was talking to our former colleague.
Well, they went to, while you were doing that, they went to Senate Bill 439. So, anyway.
What is that bill?
That's the prevent wage bill.
Oh.
Yeah. So, anyway. We were talking in some length, and if my staff could send me that amendment, if Mr. Chappie could send me that amendment, please, that we were just discussing, that would be great.
Senator from the 13th Amendment, I think, what we're on.
Right. We were discussing that some, you know, this is my eighth year of this fight,
yeah,
about this. And, you know, yesterday we were talking about education, and we were talking about how I heard teachers, I heard students, I heard this, I heard that. And then we go to this issue and we talk about contractors and we talk about unions and we talk about other things and all this sort of stuff. And we talk about all these different groups. And then we talk about school districts and we talk about local subdivisions and we talk about taxpayers and we talk about all these different things. And thank you. What sometimes we fail to bring up is it's all at some level centered to the same person. I mean, we get in this building and we talk about all these different groups, like somehow the taxpayer is different than the guy right now or woman
that's paying the taxes.
That we're, yeah, right. That we're, and so I, you know, what's always intuitively kind of I've wondered about this bill is, do you really go back to your local coffee shop and say, tell your constituents, you know, you are making $22 an hour, but by my action down there, I successfully got you down to 16. Or I successfully got you down to 11.
I successfully
got it to where the contractor doesn't necessarily have to pay for health care. doesn't have to pay for job training, doesn't have to pay for any of that. I weakened the law today so that now you have less, you make less, you aren't trained as well.
Don't have health insurance anymore.
And so then you go to the reason for this is, well, school districts and local government have come forward and said, You and I were talking the last time about a smart superintendent will recognize that he wants somebody making $32 an hour. I believe one of our colleagues has guessed, but I'll leave it to him to
just,
get up and...
Just yell.
Three senators on the floor. For what purpose does the senator from Lewis write?
I wish to seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Up in the upper gallery right behind me, we have a group of homeschoolers from Kirksville, and their chaperone with them today is Mr. Dennis Miller, and I'd like the body to make them
Let's
feel
welcome
very
these
welcome.
Homeschooler guests at the Senator from Lewis. Please rise for a welcome by the Missouri Senate. Proceed with the inquiry.
Thank you, Mr. President. But so, you know, you think about this, and we deal with all of these interests down here, and you and I have been part of the discussion with the Senator from 13th and the Senator from Stoddard, and, you know, the last week in our inquiry about this, or I forget the last time we were up on this bill.
Let's see.
Really, to me...
March 28th.
Yeah, March 28th.
March 27th.
It just appeared to me that... From that meeting, this is really just two construction sides. This is really two sides of the construction debate in a room arguing about one business model versus another business model. We're, by the way, in the status quo, both business models exist. And I'm just wondering, the energy behind this bill, I'm not sure there would be the same energy if the cable company was fighting with AT&T, or AT&T was fighting with Verizon, or Verizon. So the telecommunications, there's constant turf battles, there's constant discussion. Yeah, that happens in the course of events.
But
I'm not sure
that
battle would rise to the level of, we've got to get this done.
Let me stop you there. The difference is, if AT&T and Comcast both came to the legislature and say, that's a bad idea. That's a bad bill. Which, in the meetings that we had, he can interrupt us at any time.
Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, I'd like to ask unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Mr. President, up behind me and in front of you is the Tri-County Christian School from Macon. Would like the body to make them feel very welcome.
Let's welcome these special guests. Please rise for recognition by the Missouri Senate. Proceed, Senator.
If you would, you were about to answer before we were.
Yeah,
we
my own. Guests. The meetings that we had, I don't know, four different meetings, and three of those we had all the interest groups in one room. And all but one person thought that this bill was a bad idea. And the interest groups that I'm talking about are owners of contracting companies, both Republican and Democrat, union, non-union.
Yeah, and that's the point I want to make clear to the body is there's a myth, which is that somehow this is just the union contractors against non-union contractors. And if you look at NECA and you look at some of those organizations...
ASA is the best example.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of...
Really, by the way...
Subcontractors.
By the way, there are a lot of delineations, just like with telecommunications or anything. I would imagine that some smaller contractors have a different interest in that market than larger contractors. But that's non-unique. That's true in medicine. It's true in telecommunications. It's true in that. And by the way, there probably is also, Senator, a likely rural versus urban area delineation between contractors.
Right.
That the rural, maybe smaller contractor feels that they're... But the problem is that they have to deal with that. Now, I am distributing an amendment right now that is actually a substitute amendment for the senator from 13th. And I'm going to inquire of him in a little while. But the purpose of this is his amendment requires contractors as a condition eligible to bid for public contractors. So you've heard all the discussion about this bill. We've got to protect the taxpayer. We've got to do that. The senator from 13th attempts to do that with his underlying amendment to have them submit a wage survey. Now, Senator, back on his amendment, the consensus, except the consensus of that room, except for one or two contractor groups,
right,
was if you want to fix whatever perceived problem, have contractors report. That way, the prevailing wage law works. It goes up or down based on the region because it's an accurate reflection. If there are inaccuracies now, may or may not, then make contractors report. And that was the consensus of that room. Now, to be fair, when I say consensus of that room, there were two groups that didn't want to do that. One group, I think, to speak precisely, said, well, I want mandatory reporting, but we'll have to talk about this later. That group wanted us to adopt this thing that's in the center from Stoddard's bill about, using this federal survey, which they kind of suggest, which they instruct other federal departments, don't use this to set wages. That's in their own question and answers. They say,
yeah, you
don't
mentioned
use
that
this.
Last night. I hadn't heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I want to speak precisely, but there's an instruction I'll read that is part of this questionnaire. This is what we would be basing in the center from Stoddard's bill, how we calculate prevailing wage. Within the federal website, there's a question that is an instruction that says to other federal departments, hey, this is a survey. Don't use this as science.
Right.
And we're now about to put that in state law, and we're about to send this bill over to the House, and we're about to invoke the previous question or whatever we're going to do, and we're going to have the governor veto this bill, and we're not going to have the votes to override the bill. But, welcome to our world. All we need is to call a special session to do this. I don't think, actually, I have a suggestion, a modest suggestion. This being my last year, why don't we call us back into special session to deal with prevailing wage? Because from my perspective, given the success that we've had, I don't have much to worry about.
Right.
By the way, I'm going to distribute this, if I could get one of the doormen to distribute this. I made a mistake on some information I sent out about there had been some surveillance of job sites. Is my name on all those? I want to make sure I'm not violating. Okay. I wasn't asking you if my name was on it. I was asking
you. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I like to nickname this photo Job Safety. Those pictures that I showed you, with the adolescent on the job site on a historic tax credit project in downtown Kansas City, this is what I like to call Job Safety. And this is another photo from some of those job sites. And the reason that I shared this with the body is I've heard all this discussion about low income and historics. And I agree, and I think people have made very valid points about those, that maybe we spend too much money on this state, that they should be capped or appropriated. But by the way, if I was a tax credit critic, I would not dismiss what I provided this body last week and today, because it further affirms your argument. The proponents of historic and low-income tax credits, and many of the tax credits in the system, the purported public purpose is that it also, by the advocates, creates jobs.
Right.
What I wanted the body to see is these photos are your state tax dollars at work.
How old is this person? Do you have any idea?
I don't know how old this person is, but look at the height of the...
Right.
In all likelihood, they're not
doing
that
on their
own. Those
that are just listening, you have someone that looks pretty young that has a
and what I mean is I wanted the body
stilts
now
instead of scaffolding where they would be tied off. They look like they just put two by fours together and duct taped.
Well, those
it
are
around.
Probably actually stilts, but I don't think they're supposed to be used that way.
No.
I think they may have come from a circus or something, but But no, I mean, this is a job site. These are job sites. This, all these pictures, and I heard people ridiculing them last week, and that's fine. The bottom line is, Senator, let me make my point. This is your state tax dollars at work. We sit here, and all the discussion we've had about low income and historic, this is the part you don't see. We think that we're creating jobs. Well, we are creating jobs. But guess what? In all likelihood, you have contractors and subcontractors who are not paying
income taxes.
The second injury fund, to workers' comp. They're probably not bonded. And that's
taxes.
With your state. And that's part of the job
we're
creation.
We're cutting $700 million from our budget. And
right.
We have...
And by the way, in the local school district, which school districts and local governments from sometimes outstate are advocates of doing away with prevailing wage, this is what could happen to you. And by the way, Senator, the important point is, this is in the status quo. This is in the status quo.
One of the only ways that we've mentioned before that the Division of Labor found out that we've had some, they can't document the workers anywhere in both Oklahoma and Missouri. One of the ways they found that out is they asked for the wages.
Right.
Right? If we do away with prevailing wage, what are they going to ask for?
They won't really have anything. They will have less. The only thing you will have, and is a very weakened ability of local governments to require something. But as we've kind of found out, some of these cities, like after horrific disasters, they call because they're victims to out-of-state contractors, contractors who hire undocumented workers. Senator, you read about the case that happened 2 or 3 months ago in which a subcontractor came into an area, rented equipment, was hired by a local government jurisdiction.
Then the senator from the 14th district.
Rented the equipment.
Three senators standing on the floor. Senator from Cole, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
First of all, I'd like to thank my colleagues for allowing me to interrupt their debate. And for those of you who don't know, we have some fourth graders today from Immaculate Conception School here in Jefferson City. There are 48 students and 21 parents visiting the state's capital today, along with their teacher, Mrs. Peggy Job and Mrs. Cindy Walken. I ask that the Missouri State Senate make the fourth graders from IC Angels feel welcome today.
With the guests of the senator from Cole, the Angels, please stand up. And Senate, let's recognize them. Thanks for coming to Jefferson City. Proceed.
Mr. President, thank you for your courtesy.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Mr. President.
You're welcome. Proceed.
Anyway, Senator, so we were on the point that just after all these horrific disasters that have taken lives and all that, in the wake of all of that, what happens is contractors, and they're the term of is known in the contractor world as storm chasers.
Right.
They go and manipulate. The attorney general of this state, after what happened in Joplin, it's not just in construction, in insurance, in fly-by-night operations, they come in and try to exploit these communities that have been through a horrific disaster. Construction is not...
You were actually talking about what happened up in Bridgeton before we were interrupted, and you were in the middle of explaining what happened.
Yes, and what I was getting back to that these storm chasers. So in Bridgeton, that was a case where the contractor came in, rented equipment. It was so bad, they stole the rented equipment.
Right. They came in and bid on a job to redo a lot of the public infrastructure after the tornado that hit Lambert and the communities around St. Ann and Bridgeton. They didn't have their own equipment. So they go to an equipment company, they rent all the equipment that they need to rebuild, and they go back to Michigan with the equipment that they rented and stole it. They're under federal investigation right now.
Right. By the way, so people would say, okay, a critic would say, Senator from 11th, you're wrong. That's happening in the status quo, okay? But the problem is the Senator from Stoddard's bill is a weakening of all of those things.
Right.
And by the way, we're missing an opportunity as many of the contractor organizations have said as a solution to this, have mandatory reporting. That would arm school districts and cities with the ability to look at wages to make sure that they're that they are. It would also give them the ability to determine a local bidder, more likely. It would also more likely be able to determine, are they paying taxes? Let me talk about another issue. Center from 13th, the center from Cape, the center from Stoddard, the center from 23rd, and this whole body, but particularly last year, have dealt with the issue of workers' comp and second injury fund. Okay, in 2005, people came in, said, we're not going to spend a lot of money, or we're going to limit the cap on these employer contributions to 3%.
Right.
Okay. A lot of us warned that that would be a mistake, and guess what happened? That was in 2005. 6 years later, we find ourselves
back here again.
We find ourselves with this mistake. And the mistake is, second injury fund is bankrupt, okay? Workers' comp, there were all sorts of problems, but there were financial problems. People don't pay their, okay. All of these things, getting back to my beginning point of when we talk about school districts and local governments and workers and unions and non-union contractors and all this, and people who belong to school district and taxpayers, they're all the same person. And by the way, beyond that, some of these problems affect everything else we do. Yesterday, we were spending a lot of time on education. Well, money is traditionally an issue in education. You ask the center from 15th, center from 24th, they have a different perspective than somebody from rural Missouri.
Right.
They might have a different perspective than the center from 1st or myself. Whatever, because money's the stake, and the legislature tries to determine fairness. Okay, but in that discussion, the part that's missed is some of these occasionally from rural Missouri show up and say, well, we've got to waive prevailing wage. Well, let's talk about that. They don't want their own people to make decent money.
What happened in job?
They don't want the contractor to have to pay workers' comp.
In Joplin, what they should have done the first time is give the demolition work to a local contractor. The initial gave with the undocumented workers came from another state. The school district had to rebid the demolition work and gave it to a local contractor.
Here's the other thing that keep in mind. That school district could solve the school district that feels, well, we ought to, and it's not all school districts, it's some school districts come up and testify. They could solve the problem tomorrow morning, and our contractor suggested how. In the bid documents, and maybe this is a good idea, and I bet places who've been through horrific disasters, who've been manipulated by storm chasers who hire undocumented workers, I bet they're starting to think this way. They don't need the state legislature to do this. When you put out something to bid, require mandatory payrolls.
Which is what I think the senator from
right.
the 13th...
Right, which brings us back to the senator from 13th.
Right.
Well, here's the problem, and here's... I'm going to get to this, but I distributed an amendment, which is a substitute amendment. It does what the senator from 13th does, but it also removes all the other stuff, because if you get back to the base bill, the senator from Stoddard... And we went into this at length last time. The senator from Stoddard removed all of those things. I mean, there's obviously the wage survey that he added. There's the Bureau of Labor Standards that he's using as the basis for wages. And...
And basically is you're removing the brackets from the Senate committee substitute.
Yeah, I mean that I'm trying to get back to you know, his amendment is fine in purpose, but what's amazing to me is we sit in a room and we hear a huge sector of the construction industry say, please don't do this. We do this there's acknowledgement, if not agreement, that from everybody in that room that that would either lower or raise wages, but it would create a market force in wages. And what do? We come along, we come up with this, with the Federal Bureau of Labor Standards rates, which is based on a survey that they instruct other departments don't use this.
A semi-annual mail survey.
We're about to make this state law, and everybody in that room, large contractors, people who built the skylines of this, small contractors who do this every day are saying, don't do this. You know, I think you heard Joe Privatera from Mark
right.
One, who I invited to those meetings.
Yeah, what he says what he thinks will happen in these 68% of the counties that don't report wages, the wages will go down.
And well, he didn't say that.
They could.
Well, what he said, to be precise, is the senator from CAPE asked him in committee, well, what if this low? He said, the senator from CAPE asked him in committee, well, what if this lowers wages?
Good.
And Joe Privatera, being the honest guy, said, then it'll be fair. It may not. They may go up. But whatever you have will be accurate because everybody's on a level playing field.
Common sense would tell you that some of the outstate counties' wages will go down.
Well, but let's get back to the level playing field. If everybody reports, it's that. In the status quo, not everybody reports. What typically happens, the contractor, in most circumstances, that pays their workers' comp insurance, their wages, their pension, that person reports. The other person does not. Okay? For whatever parade of reasons that they stated. There's an unevenness there.
Right.
I mean, it would be solved by everybody reporting these wages. Be report by that. That it would create, and it would just create a level playing field in which everybody knew whatever. It might raise wages, it might lower wages, but it would be fair.
But the process would be fair.
The process would be fair.
I hate to do this to you right now.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of my fire chiefs in. The senator from St. Francis asked if you could just inquire him for a few minutes. I'll come right back out.
Well, I'll go ahead and offer my amendment. I don't need to inquire of anybody. I'm more than happy to offer my amendment if you need to go.
It'll take me a few minutes.
Okay. Mr. President?
The senator from the 11th.
I have an amendment. I have a substitute amendment for Amendment 1.
Please send the substitute amendment forward.
Okay, I don't care.
Has the amendment been distributed?
Mr. President, it has, and I would move for the adoption of the amendment.
The senator moves the adoption of the Senate substitute amendment. And are you requesting a waiver of the reading?
I'm sorry, I would request a waiver of the reading. It has been distributed.
Great. Would you care to explain your substitute amendment?
Yes, Mr. President. Mr. President, the senator from the 13th pending amendment requires contractors as a condition to eligible on bid public construction job to either submit a wage survey information from the previous year or to certify that it did not engage in any public construction the previous year. Adding the requirement to submit a wage survey makes no sense because in the current bill, the senator from Stoddard has, as the basis of that, a survey from the Federal Bureau of Labor Standards. Now, many of you weren't listening, and many of you aren't listening now, but the language in the Federal Bureau of Labor Standards, it's a survey. It doesn't contemplate occupational titles. It doesn't contemplate differences. It has wage earners with salaried earners. It's a survey. By the way, it's totally incomplete. It's a national survey that takes a small percentage and a small sampling. Within the department's own website, it instructs other federal departments, do not use this as a basis for anything. This is a survey It's for economic planning purposes. It's for that. It's not actual wage data. It doesn't contemplate benefits. It doesn't contemplate any of those things. So I would remind the body that in the Senator from Stoddard's bill, we are about to adopt that as the basis for using the department, for using that as a calculation for the state's prevailing wage law. It does not include, I want to go into some of the things that it does not include. Yes. What? Okay. The semi-annual survey does not include self-employed or owners, partners of unincorporated firms. The current system does accept this wage information. Classification of wages by region varies dramatically. As you know, if you remember from last time, this includes Guam, the Virgin Islands, and other federal possessions. That's what, by the way, we're about to use as the basis for paying our fellow Missourians in prevailing wage. The data collected by state workforce agencies, it does not include new data. It was a 2010 survey. They also, the survey themselves, declined by nearly 14%. Five out of the 13 OES districts in Missouri contain parts of neighboring states. So I would just remind the body that nobody has really contemplated using this system instead of the other system. So the purpose of my amendment is to do what the Senator from 13th is doing, which I think is responsible, but I also don't want to do what he does and then have this OES system that's totally unproven, that's questionable, that isn't the basis of anything. So anyway, with that, Mr. President, I'll be happy to yield to any inquiry.
The senator from the 11th moves the adoption of Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1 to Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from St. Francis, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, do you yield?
I yield happily to my senatorial colleague.
He does. Proceed.
Yeah, thank you. I thought we'd wait.
You know, it's been quite a while.
It is. I'm not.
It's been a couple of years since.
It has been a while since I talked to you, but in any length. The reason I wanted to talk to you, though, but on this issue, we keep going back to this issue. And I've talked to a lot of my union people in the area, and I represent places like the Senator from Jefferson, since I represent Jefferson County, which has a good reporting system. But I also represent Carter County, which has no reporting system.
Right.
There has got to be something that can be done in outstate. I don't think that we should, and I know that I've told the union people from our area that I'm not for getting rid of prevailing wage completely. On the other hand, down at Carter County, to use Cape Girardeau's rates or whatever, because nobody reports in Reynolds County, nobody reports in Carter County, nobody, and the senator from Stoddard, the Boot Hill, I'm same way. I know that you all have met a bunch of times, but I cannot believe, and I'm not going to get in the middle of it, but I cannot believe there can't be some system devised for outstate, the St. Louis metropolitan area, including Jefferson and Washington, the surrounding areas, Kansas City, Springfield, that has adequate way of reporting this, to be separated in some way or put some responsibility on the presiding commissioners in those counties to come up with some type of wage rates in Iron County, Reynolds County, until we come up with some method for outstate to adequately report what the prevailing wage is in that area, we're going to have a problem.
Right.
And there's going to be certain people in this body that want to get rid of prevailing wage completely because of it, and there's going to be certain ones of you that really don't want to change it, because I'm sure Senator from 13th feels that it's great and it's fine in its present form, and it might be minorly changed, but until we have some substantive change, Senator, that shows, reflects that outstate, and I just wish we could come up with what that is.
Senator, you are very experienced in this body. When you were majority floor leader of this body, Typically, there would be a dispute about a telecommunications bill. There would be a dispute about some industry bill. There would be a dispute about building a nuclear power plant or not building a nuclear power plant, where somebody in the industrial has a different perspective than somebody who's in a utility. And what you would typically do, and what we do in this body, is we go, look, we're just a bunch of dumb elected officials. Most of us has absolutely no experience in building a building. By the way, most school boards and city councils are made up of people that way as well. You came from local government. I came from local government. I'm sure you built things when you were the mayor, but and had your city do it, but I'm sure it was a lot of it was enlightening and a brand new experience. And so I've had that same experience. But what I get to is what you're talking about is fairness. And the way this body tries to determine fairness is to bring people who are involved in actually doing it. Now, to the credit of the Center from Stoddard and the people who don't like prevailing wage, we had a lot of meetings about this. Now, the meetings were not unproductive, and nor have I tried to be inaccurate in telling this body what has gone on in those meetings. Senator, a number of organizations that probably lean heavily the union way, but are made up of union and non-union, NECA, SMACA, contractor associations. By the way, Senator, just so you are aware, no one from labor was even there. This was a discussion by contractors. Now, there was one person who had been with labor, but this was not a meeting with the Missouri AFL-CIO or even the building trades. This was the contractors, because what I wanted to have happen is I didn't really want to hear from the people who are hired in this process, quite frankly. I wanted to hear from the people who go out there in this economy and build St. Louis and Kansas City and build a school here and actually do it every day. Because I, like you, am honest enough to admit I'm not an expert on it. Now, you and I have been in this body, and there's a lot of people who come out here and act like they're an expert. And I like to remind people, it's just their opinion. And sometimes it's just my opinion, but you and I pretty openly say that. Now, I'm getting to your point, which is what you just expressed was a desire for fairness and making this thing work, and that there's a separation sometimes between suburban and urban counties and rural Missouri in the construction market, and that wages should reflect that. Senator, I brought a member of your party who has a large electrical contractor, so he's not going to, Senator, in this argument, he's not going to represent the small contractor. He's a large contractor.
I understand.
But he said in committee, look, if you want to solve this, he said, this is my ninth year of coming down here to my own legislature fighting this, saying, leave my industry alone. These contractors, Senator.
I understand his frustration, Senator, and that's where I'm encouraging.
Well, I'm getting to what he said. He said, and most of the room, except for a couple of contractor groups, said, mandatory reporting. You know, like the Senator from 13th Amendment. You want to solve this? By the way, they said, you don't even need to involve the state legislature. Cities, if they're so concerned about this, or school districts, if they're so concerned about this, make it as a condition of their bond and contract. As you know, in local government, not every school district and city is smart enough to require a bonding requirement.
Senator, let me ask you this. How many operating engineers do you think worked NARs in Carter County last year?
I think if you had mandatory reporting, it would reflect that.
I don't think there's any that worked. I don't think there was any that worked in rentals. I don't think there was any. So it's tough to come up and say, okay, let's mandatory report their hours. When they're not working, you can report them to the end of the earth. And it still doesn't give you a basis to provide a wage that is considered the area. And I don't know what the solution is. I wish I had a solution. My point to you standing up today is I would like to see you all, instead of let's saying, okay, let's try to delay this, let's try to kill this because we don't think the sponsor is listening to us. Let's try,
I would encourage you to try to find a solution that if I'm fortunate enough to get on, put on the other side of the building for the next 6 years, that I don't have to deal with this every year, that we've come up with an adequate solution for people in Carter County to come up with their wage rate, for people down in Oregon County and other places that they don't have a lot of construction activity that they can base wage rates on. I don't know what that is, but surely there's a solution that you could proactively work on instead of being defense.
Senator, you would not, though, take that same worker you just mentioned where there may not be hours reported and go to a system that is in the current bill that is a survey by
a
federal department.
I'm not saying that's a good system. What I'm saying is
Senator, they actually instruct other agencies, don't use this as a wage survey.
I'm with you there. What I'm saying, there's got to be a system that is reasonable, and I'm asking you all to try to, you that work in that industry, to come up with that system so that we can get out of this problem without just saying, okay, let's just use whatever the system says that we shouldn't be used.
Senator, I want to get back to what you would do and what you did very skillfully when you were majority. Look, for the first step is we had these meetings, and we had contractors of diverse size, some union, some non-union, and not everybody in the room said this, but a majority in that room said, you want to make this fair and more accurate? The mandatory reporting, they brought that up. I didn't bring that up. By the way, if I just wanted to stop something, I would just try to stop it, Senator. But from the beginning, I've said, look, we wanted to have a discussion about contractors. That's what I suggested. What did they say was a solution to this? So keep in mind, this mandatory reporting, this isn't something, if I was up here just defending the status quo, I wouldn't be talking about mandatory reporting.
Well,
because
Senator,
that's my point. And Senator, I know, I don't doubt the Senator from Stoddard or anybody in this process, but we've had what I felt were good, productive meetings. I'm not aware of when we reached a deadlock. We did go to this bill, and that's fair game. And sometimes majority floor leaders and President Pro Tems go to a bill to force people to talk. You well know that.
And that's what I guess I'm saying. I'm going to end the inquiry, but I would tell you, even if you believe that the process is not perfect right at the present time to come up with a solution, I would challenge you and the Senator from the 13th and Jefferson and the other interest party to come up with something that does not make the bill less palatable, but actually is something from those of us that represent outstates can live with and say, yeah, we can live with that, and let's go on. Let's take that as a compromise and go on. And I don't know if the other people that are proposing this bill would take that, but surely we've got to find some solution.
Senator, I am very fully aware of the legislative process, but the current bill, the way it's written, as you well know, I cannot let 6 decades of an industry that has been built by other people, and when we get a lot of those people in that room and they say, don't do this, I'm not going to be legislatively irresponsible and just say, well, I don't want to anger somebody, I'll let the bill go through. And by the way, I also am calculated enough to know that if we don't do what you're suggesting, Senator, it's not going to become law anyway. I just want to tell everybody, I don't know what happens to this bill when you send it over to the other body. I don't know what the Speaker of the House's position is on prevailing wage. I don't think he agrees entirely with the leadership over here as far as priority. I don't know that. Okay, so it even gets through.
Who knows?
I do know, Senator, that I would...
When are we going to get a decree from on high, from the second floor, that this is my solution, this is what I will go with, and this is what I won't veto, and let's get together? We have to have some leadership from the second floor on some of these more controversial issues that says, this is a solution, this is a possible, this is what my labor department, along with business community,
well,
along with unions, say is the solution.
Senator, to be fair,
I've yet to hear
Senator,
from the second floor.
To be fair, you're an honest person, I'm an honest person, you know, we serve with 32 other honest people. But let's be fair before we start the, you know, now this is from a guy who used to call the guy, you know, the other guy, His Majesty. But I get it. But let me be fair to the Department of Labor and the governor. The Department of Labor has been at all of these meetings, or most of these meetings, the last few meetings. They have listened to the contractors, and they have recommended mandatory reporting. They've also recommended, and the Senator from 13th talked about this the last time, that other states have an electronic filing system that makes it easy, to do, and that there are corrections you can make in the current system when a wage is not reported for a certain occupation, like your operating engineer. So I'm just saying, it's not like we haven't heard from them. The Director of Labor has been at all those meetings. Now, I don't think that there's agreement on what he says. I don't think the Senator from Phelps agrees with what I say or what he says. But I just want to let you know, it's not some case where we haven't had meetings. The last meeting we were at, I didn't see that we were at a deadlock. I just think
we're at one of those points where people say... I believe there are people in this body that are willing to vote on it, whether it's a good solution or not. They just want to vote on it so they can get their vote to get it done because they've told people they're going to vote on it. I'm not satisfied with that. I would like a solution.
Well, we dealt with this,
there's got to be a reasonable
Senator,
solution.
I know you're just, you know, giving me the shipping news of, I know that dynamic is at place, but here's my question on prevailing wage. You're going to pull the final legislative step here in the Senate for a bill that gets vetoed by the governor that nobody really understands all the minutia of it. And by the way, you're a majority floor leader. You're very skilled, and this went through your head because you had to deal with these decisions. Where's the previous question on economic development? Where's the previous question on education?
I'm not going to debate you on that.
No, I know, but you and I both...
A bill that's automatically going to veto does not rise to that level just so we can get a vote, but we need a solution to this problem.
Well, I hope everybody feels that way because I'm just saying when I hear... I understand people want to pressure to create something, but I think, does the Senator from Lawrence likely have guests?
I'm going to get in my inquiry. Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Lawrence, what purpose do you rise?
I request unanimous consent for the introduction of special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the rear gallery, watching the work today, we have some wonderful young people and their teachers and parents from St. Mary's School in Pierce City, Missouri. We have Jonna Brotlin, Christina Stellwagen, Evan McDunner, Aaron Randall, Andrew Yonker. These are 7th and 8th graders, and I'd ask the body to welcome them and wish them well on their day and their travels.
With a guest from Pierce City, what a great name. Please stand and be recognized. Thank you for coming to Jefferson City. Further discussion, Senator from Green, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I also rise seeking unanimous consent, introduction of special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your left and on our right, seated along the bench there is Jackie Jenkins, the director of the OTC Career Center in Springfield, and the entire Ozarks Technical Community College leadership team, along with 4 students. They came into the chamber today aware of our debate and listening intently, and I just would like to see if we could welcome them as well.
With the guests from the Senator from Green, please stand and be recognized, and thanks for what you do for us at OTC. Thanks for coming. Senator from Christian, for what purpose do you rise?
I ask for unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
See no objection. Proceed.
Mr. President, to your left and to my right, over here in uniform in the corner, have some very special guests. This is our junior ROTC unit from Ozark, Missouri. They have won 4 out of the last 5 National Air Rifle Championships in the United States. They are currently the national champion in the United States. This is the best shooting team in the country, and they've won 4 out of the last 5, and the little gal in the middle was on 3 of those 5 units. She's a senior this year. The other 3 are juniors, and they'll be back to win another one next year. I'm very proud of them. They're from Ozark, Missouri. Their coach is retired First Sergeant Terry Thompson, Tessa Howell, McKinnon Duran, Shelby Brummett, and Logan Hunt are the members, and I would very much like to give them a special applause today.
Let's welcome the Ozark Junior ROTC and congratulate them on their national award. Very good job. We're proud of you. Senator from the 22nd.
Thank you. To inquire the... Let him get out of the way first. Inquire the Senator from the 13th.
The 13th?
Or, I'm sorry, the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, do you yield?
I yield happily, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, first of all, I know that you probably weren't happy with me leaving, but the...
Well, Senator, I just wanted to warn you, I've got 19 days left.
I know you're...
After 9 years, I just want to warn you, the last 19 days, my patience level
is...
with other people's idiosyncrasies that have bothered me for the last
5 to 6 years.
I don't typically do that, but the chief that
I've got to go
came,
take. Can I go over the idiosyncrasies? Can you hold the floor? I've got to run over to the house. Can you do this? I've got to go run back to da da da. And it's not. It's never getting an amendment or something functional. It's always, yeah. I've got to have my picture taken. But I've got to go flip a pancake.
That's not what that was about.
See, this in my world, that does not rise to the level of interrupting the business of the Missouri Senate.
And I know that
so I want to warn you,
the
last
mind.
19 days, and I've already put my warning out to those members in the other body, that I have redug all the trenches. I have replanted all the mines. The barbed wire is in place and it's electrified. So bounding House members coming
over
for help with their bills, the last 19 days will not be permitted in the Senator from 11th office.
And you're from Independence.
And I'm from Independence, and the last human being from Independence, Missouri, used the atomic bomb twice.
Right. Yeah. The fire chief that came up here, he's retiring in a couple days. He's been working at the same fire department since he's been 12 when his father was a fire chief. He volunteered there.
He's someone that I
respect immensely. And
I understand.
I understand your point of view.
I'm just telling you that I'm trying to be upfront. The last 19
I should have sent
days,
a note to him and said, I can't come off the floor right now, but I just wanted to get
I'm
that
just
up
trying to warn you, the last 19 days, if you've ever seen the show Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'm Larry David the last 19 days. Every idiosyncrasy is going to get on my nerves.
The look on your face when I said I
needed
to
go talk to
him.
Because, you know, you're leaving this place, and you get cranky about that. And
my tie was white before I asked you that.
And you're upset, and you're upset at stuff people do, but then 6 months from now, you'll miss that they do that.
Right.
Because it was annoying at the time. So all that's going on, so I just want to
warn you up front. I have a feeling you'll be much like many of the former senators, actually one's up there, that once they leave here, they never look back.
No, I won't.
And they're happier after they left than
they
were.
I have a theory of that, too. If you remember in high school, you'd be a senior, and some guy who had been the senior the year before, when you were a junior, comes back from college to
right.
class, you know, and like, you know,
goes
the
up
teacher,
at the high school.
Oh,
part.
Jimmy's back, and Jimmy started. Oh, how's college? Da 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 da. And I would always go, okay, you're graduated. It's done. Move on. You
right.
know, we don't want to see you again. We were happy you left at the time. Don't come back after your first year of college. No one cares.
It's creepy.
Yes. So anyway, they want
to
come back. They
want to
come back and relive all that. Now,
it always
we were talking
when they wear their Senate pin too after they're gone from here.
Yes. Let's get back to. Yeah. Let's get back to. I thought the,
so the senator from the third.
I thought the senator from the third was, and I wanted him to understand because he's a fair man. That look, every one of the, it's not like the last discussion we had on prevailing wage, we walked out and said, oh, blah, 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 blah. What I'm trying to indicate to the body is the people who do this, some of them small, some of them large, don't have complete agreement. A lot of them, some who are not even non-union, say, you want to fix this? Mandatory reporting.
Right.
Now, what would happen in the center from third circumstance where you didn't have wages is, the other thing is, what construction is going to be going on if it's not going on? So if you contemplate in whatever system you're using.
And I appreciate what he's
circumstance
saying,
where somebody,
but the bill that we're working on, Senator,
yeah.
and we are, or at least I don't want to talk for other people, have been willing to find some middle ground. But then you read the bill, and it eliminates prevailing wage on page 8, section 290.337, in any area that's been declared a federal disaster. Now, in the last 10 years, every county in the state's been declared a federal disaster area.
Right.
So what this does is it eliminates prevailing wage. It could eliminate prevailing wage, based on historical knowledge, in every county in the state at certain times. Now, that part shouldn't be in the bill.
Right.
The issues that we talked about where we've had two different contractors that, for lack of a better term, caused problems, were both out-of-state contractors that were here in disaster areas trying to take work away from local contractors. So that's one point. The second one is they want to eliminate the mode method completely. and go to this occupational employment statistic, which is a semi-annual mail survey that's not based in any facts or any...
Which has a limited reporting.
Mark Twain said what? Don't let the facts get in the way of a good argument.
Which, again, so the body is familiar. We're going to use this as a basis for all of our contractors. So when you drive back home and you drive through things and you see J.E. Dunn, when you see these large contractors, most of them in that room said, please don't do this. So I want the body to know that. The other thing is I get back to the philosophy of this is, well, I want there to be a fair system, and I appreciate what the Senator from Third says. I really doubt that people are going to rush back into a coffee shop back home and say, I fought for lower wages for you. And, you know, we tend to create these new dirty words. There's the old dirty words, there's that, but we try to create new dirty words. And the new dirty word is somehow, and it's bizarre, pension. Pension's now a dirty word. And, you know, I remember pension was used to be a good word.
I told you last time, I am happy that I paid into my laborer's pension over the last 20 years.
Well, what I mean is pension was always, you know, but now it's this dirty word. And so if you notice in this discussion we have, well, some contractors in that room that you've been in have said, Why are you doing this? I mean, my favorite was, I forget who said it, I think it was maybe one of the guests of the Senator from 13th at the meeting, said, look, we do everything right. We pay our taxes, we pay into the second injury fund, we pay workers' comp. We just want to work and succeed. And yeah, our employees have pensions, so they don't starve, so they don't die, so they don't work. We have job safety, we have job training. And by the way, none of that you guys pay for. Now, you go to Southern State Center, and everybody acts like Texas and Kansas and some of these places are just these. They're not.
Texas has prevailing wages.
Texas has one of, but I'm just saying they always use, whether it's right to work or this, they always use these examples of these glowing states.
Tennessee's, yeah.
My question is, look, the reality is this recession has created problems for everybody. If you think that one of these examples is a glowing example, just read about what they're going through in their state budget. And it makes some of our decisions look like cakewalks, some of these other states, that are brought up as glowing examples, shining states on the hill of what to do in economic development or what to do. And if we just fought every day to pay Missourians less, and if we made sure that people in retirement didn't have a good pension because pensions are bad now. Instead of realizing the same pensioner that we were talking about in education last night is that same taxpayer, and do we really want them to live on Social Security when they're? Do we really want them to work like the things I've distributed to you? Do we really want somebody to do that for five decades? Senator, I was talking to somebody the other night. I don't know if you ever look at those famous photos of the 1930s and the job that I could never do in my life would be
skyscrapers,
yes,
in New York City.
If you ever see those photos that some were so adept at it, they would eat lunch and even sleep on those beams. I couldn't get anywhere near that beam. Now, I was telling somebody at the turn of the century when New York and these cities were going vertical and the price of real estate was, you know, going up, and so you had to build vertically, right? That's why things are so expensive. You got to build up. You can't build out. When we were having the boom in this country and we were starting to build those skylines of Chicago and New York, for a good two, three decades, three out of 10 of those workers died on the job.
Right.
So in those days, they fell. Their family got nothing. They injured themselves, they lost whatever, there was no workers' comp. But it's funny how now we act like all those, whether it's workers' comp or pension or whatever, are these awful things that are expensive. And they don't realize that we're drinking from a well that we didn't dig, but that well was dug by a generation who understood we don't want to do this again. But we occasionally have people that want to bring us back to that world. And I just don't get it. I mean, our whole economic development philosophy is trying to create jobs with high wages. We define it that way. We define a quality job. We define a quality job in this state. What happened to that? So with one hand we create this, but with the other hand we take it away. With one hand we take away this, and then we're shocked that the second injury fund and workers' comp and all these things are underfunded, or that have some crisis financially. We deal with education out here, and we don't realize, well, gee, maybe one thing that would solve that would be a prosperous middle class in that school district. We hear very genuine things. In this bill, in the very early days of this bill, you heard people say, oh, the state doesn't get involved in wages of other professions. Oh, really? The senator from Lewis, 3 weeks ago, on an education bill, I believe it was, there's a program in the state of Missouri that you're up, which creates a minimum salary for teachers.
Right.
Why do you think that's in place, Senator?
A living wage, so they don't live off the government.
Well, and also maybe in rural Missouri and other regions of the state, we recognize that we as a state are all in this together, and St. Louis and Kansas City might have challenges, and Springfield and Independence might have challenges, and rural Missouri might have different challenges, but we all work together because we're one state, and maybe we have to do this over here, and da-da-da-da-da, because what?
Same argument with the sheriffs.
Right.
That we had under former Senator Green.
Medical reimbursements, the federal government made this decision, the much-decried federal government, in the Medicaid system. What did the Medicaid system mean to rural America?
Right.
Right or wrong? I mean, now we are in the culture, Lyndon Johnson was totally wrong and blah, 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 blah. And I heard some of the other day talking about Franklin Roosevelt set up Social Security as a Ponzi scheme. And I was sitting here thinking, wow, he didn't use the term Ponzi scheme, but he was like, well, the lifespan. And I'm like going, okay. Let's go back to all the people who didn't starve to death over the last 7 decades and ask them, while this isn't a perfect program, in the old days you starved. And by the way, maybe in a modern democracy, in a global power, you need to do stuff like that, because by 1920 and stuff, a majority of Americans weren't living on farms anymore. In the old rural setting of America, people could live off their farm. Right? You kept grandma and granddad, and that's the family farm. But by the 1920s and 30s, there was a new paradigm.
Right.
And maybe Franklin Roosevelt recognized that. Now, to take 2012 eyes and cast aspersions on Franklin Delano Roosevelt is absolutely horrifying to me. I mean, it's so absurd to take something now and say, oh, well, this was a huge mistake on his part.
Right.
And my whole point is, take the math out of it, take whatever out of it, take the actuarial table out of it, take whatever. Go ask the people who've been part of this for 7 decades.
Add compassion to it.
And by the way, why doesn't some presidential candidate out there say, let's do away with Social Security and see how far he or she gets?
Well, we know why.
Right. So what I mean is, people seem to recognize that. You know, I guess my point is, and what was the effect on the economy? Was it positive or negative of Social Security in the history of this country?
Right.
It's been a net positive.
Right.
In fact, it was so positive, the federal government, our largest debt holder is not China. It's other divisions of the federal government, the Social Security Trust Fund.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, the myth is that China's around a trade. I mean, I haven't looked at it this morning, but it's... They're not the largest debt holder is the other entities of the federal government, bus borrowing and local and state government. And, you know, if you look at debt that way, it's not that. England's high up there, too. So are the Saudis. So are the Japanese. But the political myth that you see sometimes on the great cable confusionator, which is what we call news now, is that somehow China, yeah, they're a big debt holder, but
right.
They're not even the largest. So
back to what the
senator was. No, I wanted to make the point that we now, with these modern spoiled eyes, look back at the people who dug the well that we drink from and decry everything they did. Oh, Social Security is bad. Oh, pensions are bad. Oh, people making $32 an hour are bad. Oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Let's do away with this. Let's do away with that. Let's undercut this. Oh, we can't pay those wages. We can't have people out throughout the state making high wages. Oh, let's not do that. Let's ratchet that down. Oh, we're worried about undocumented workers 1 week. Well, let's empower people who do that sort of thing the next week.
To add a face to it, after the rally we had a couple weeks ago, a gentleman came up to me and said, "Do you remember me?" I said, "Well, of course, Ralph. He was my supervisor when I used to, you know, be knee-deep in concrete." And he lived in Fredericktown, and the senator from the 3rd District. He drove 60 miles every day. He had five kids. His wife stayed at home with him. Because of prevailing wage and the wages he was making from that, was able to support his whole family. And then now he's...
But that's bad, Senator. We don't want people to do that. Do we really want people to be able to buy a home?
I told him, shame on you.
Do we really want to be able to buy a home? I mean, can't we have some group just travel around the country like we used to do in the 20th
century? And now he's retired. And now he can still support his family.
Everybody, I got $2 to build the Hoover Dam. Let's go. I mean, let's round them all up.
How many people died in the Hoover Dam?
They'll travel. The Jode family will come and we'll build it. That's how construction is happening.
How many people died in the Hoover Dam?
A lot. Actually, a lot of it, the most dangerous part, if you want to get into the minutiae, was actually the explosive part of having to blow out there's a really great series that I think some in this body will never watch, but it happens to be, I believe, a favorite of the senator from 15th and myself, The Story of Us, which was a well-done democracy of the United States. And they had a great part about the Hoover Dam. That concrete gets so hot that they had to come up with a special way of doing it, the engineer that did it. And there was a bonus if he got done on time and under budget at that time. FDR said, we need to do it.
No matter how many people were...
Well, there was, you didn't have a lot of job safety. But the amazing accomplishment from an engineering standpoint is it would have, if they laid concrete in the normal way, it would have taken something like 1,200 years for the concrete to dry in the Hoover Dam. So they had to come up with a new way of having this system that did it. And actually, it didn't take that much more time, the system. But if they had tried to pour concrete, it would still be drying. It would still be drying to this day. So, but anyway.
They poured more concrete when they built Tomsock Reservoir.
Well,
look. Or at least that's what they said at the ground.
You have a valid point of... We do all these things to undercut ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we hide the little pea in the shell, and we move the shells around, and we go, oh, well, you know, this week we're worried about undocumented workers, but this week we don't want mandatory reporting. Oh, this week we're going to not do prevailing wage. Oh, but next week we're going to be worried about workers' comp and second injury fund, but this week we'll be worried about that. Oh, by the way, the senator from 13th just reported from the budget committee that we have to spend more money on job training because last week we got rid of prevailing wage. Oh, gee, I wonder if all this stuff is connected. I wonder if one action leads to another action.
Right.
And all of it is... Oh, we've got to help the taxpayers of these districts in which a lot of the construction projects in that school district or whatever, they'll hire local people because somebody from St. Louis or Kansas City is not necessarily going to drive 2.5 hours to a construction site.
Right.
And the downside, as you well know of that, Senator, is the person in that county will make more money for a while until
the
project is done.
You said the downside to that?
Well, I'm just saying, I'm just trying to follow the theory that is purported out here.
Back to the conversation.
And then next week, while there's a downside to that, next week we will go and complain that we don't have enough job training or any of that. So, or we don't, right. Or there's no safety training, so our workers' comp rates have gone up.
Back to what you and the senator from the 3rd were talking about trying to find some solution, and my point was maybe there is some common ground. Maybe there's a way to find a solution to the problem he articulated, but this isn't it. This bill isn't it. Your amendment, the substitute amendment, maybe the underlying amendment, is a way to go at it. Maybe online reporting, make it easier for people to report, although it's not very difficult
Senator,
to report.
Senator, I think one thing that you have to contemplate in all of this is if you're going to reach a compromise, and this is what I tried to go over briefly with the Senator from Third, and you well know that I've said this in all of the meetings.
Right.
You assemble the people who do this, because with all due respect, we're just a bunch of dumb politicians who don't know anything about this business per se. Some of us have had some experience in one level of this or whatever, but we're not construction experts.
Right. I worked at it and got a paycheck. That's about right. All I knew about prevailing wage.
From 13th, skilled electrician, I'm sure he knows a lot about it, knows a lot more about it than I do. But at the end of the day, we're just dumb politicians, and we don't understand all these forces that are in effect in this industry. It's non-unique to telecommunications or any other interest that has sometimes diverse players and divergent interests. Okay? It's no different than any of those.
There's a bill Anheuser-Busch and the wholesalers have that everybody's trying to stay
in. Senator, there, as you well know in this building.
I'm going with the same example.
Yeah.
What you do is you get all interested parties into a room and have them work out their differences. The people that know what they're doing, not the people that have the ability to stand on this floor and file a bill, but the people that actually work in this business. That's what we attempted to do in all those meetings. And what I got out of the meeting was, what's broke?
Well, let me tell you, here's my take of the meeting.
Is that too simple?
Right. Let me tell you my take of the meeting. The meeting was, we walked in, we had several meetings. I thought there was a good interchange between, you know, the divergent, you know, groups. And then one time we went back to this bill, and this bill was the product of those meetings. Except that it wasn't.
Right. This didn't
reflect. Nothing in this bill was brought up by a huge sector of the people in those negotiations. In fact, to the contrary, almost everything in this bill was specifically rejected by them and said, that won't work. The one thing that they did suggest that had some groups, one group, to be accurate, say, well, we'll go with that if you change, do away with the mode method.
Right.
And then another group said, absolutely not. That's where we're at. I mean, the bill was introduced almost as the introduced 439 is completely contrary to many of the desires expressed by people who do this industry. And I want to point out for the body, the union thing is often used in this. As you know, except for one individual who wasn't there representing labor, who was representing the management side of organization, this was the contractors who do this.
I mean, you could tell from our prior debate, when I mentioned that there were 61 objections in 10 years, the objections come from basically two groups, labor or their signatory contractors and this one individual.
Right.
And here we are. And again, for the Senate's knowledge, I know nobody's listening, but in 10 years, there were 61 objections to the annual wage order. 19 of them were dismissed or withdrawn. 27 were settled by both parties, and 12 were ruled on. So in 10 years, we had the commission actually rule on only 12 objections. And,
Senator,
does that raise to a level of importance?
Let's talk about this whole issue, too.
What is more important are the undocumented workers working down in Joplin, the out-of-state contractors that were stealing equipment in St. Louis. That's what we ought to worry about. Those aren't Missouri citizens doing these jobs. These are, in one case, they may be documented, they may not, but the division can't find them documented in both Oklahoma and Missouri. That's one issue. Your photos that you send out, the one you sent out back in March, shows people getting paid a $100 bill. How is that?
I mean, I'll tell you, under full disclosure, I don't know if they were being paid.
Maybe
some employee had hit the lottery that day and was fairly distributing the winnings among the pool. But I'm just saying, look, this is just snapshots of what happens on construction sites. When we come down here and we think we're creating jobs This is your state tax dollars at work. This is in the status quo where we have prevailing wage. This doesn't even contemplate the world where nobody's reporting wages, I doubt any of these contractors are paying to workers' comp or the second injury fund. And in another week or two, we're going to be dealing with both of those issues, and guess what's going to be at stake? Money. And the senator from 1st, the senator from 13th have to sit on appropriations, don't have to sit on appropriations. They have to deal with difficult decisions. And you do away with this, and then pretty soon, next year, at least one of them will be saying, look, how come we're going to have to increase job training? Because we did away with prevailing wage, which is currently paid for not by the taxpayer, but between the contractor and the employee group. They pay for the training. We don't have to.
Right, which goes back to your substitute amendment where you take those brackets away, and we talked about this before, and I didn't notice that when I originally read the bill.
Senator, I try to remain, I want to tell you.
Important to look what the brackets took out.
Before we leave what the senator from 3rd brought up, I want to make this point too. I don't mind ever sitting down with any of my colleagues to talk about anything. But in the court of fair, the senator from 13th and myself, this all on prevailing wage started, it started under project labor agreements in 2005. It went on for 2 years. We worked out a compromise. In 2007, it was passed. It was signed by Governor Blunt. The bill sponsor was the senator from
Stoddard. That bill said that the state cannot do PLAs and that local municipalities
could still be allowed. Oh, they had to have a public hearing before they issued. Yeah, right. And it dealt a little bit with targeting and the, okay, so all of these issues. Yeah. By the way, that process involved all the parties sitting there. They went through a 2-year process. They passed the bill. When it finally passed, it passed here. Everybody was shocked. I think the senator from 10th was brand new to the body and had heard all this stuff.
We weren't here
and
yet.
She was when it finally passed. It passed in 2007. Okay. And she was here, and it was early, and it passed like in 2 minutes because everybody had all, you know, this was the second year, and everybody had finally all worked it out. Okay. So at the time, Governor Blunt signed it. Okay. In that process, we'd all gone through this. The aggrieved party, the perceived aggrieved party, everybody in that room said, and I remember the president pro tem was there, Senator Shields was there, and we go, look, we've gone through all this thing. We don't want to deal with this issue while any of us are here. Okay? Now, there's, in my book, that looks like it, like, why did I suddenly have to go back to prevailing wage last year, and particularly this year? Now, I don't mind going to any negotiation, but when you sit in a room and you say, we're not going to have to deal with this, and the only exception was if there was some major court decision. Well, last year we started seeing these bills, Senator, not because of a Supreme Court decision, not because of an appeals court decision, but a circuit court decision. So it hadn't even been fully adjudicated. And last year these bills start popping
which
up.
Which was kind of outside.
Now,
the
I want to be totally fair to the
bill.
Senator from 23rd. He wasn't in any of those meetings in 2007. I don't even think he was here yet, or maybe he was on his way here. But I'm just saying, look, a lot of people involved in this discussion well remember saying that I didn't expect that the senator from 13th and myself would have to deal with this issue. So with all due respect to what the senator from 3rd said, and he wasn't part of any of that, I don't mind going to negotiations, but I was kind of, there was a gentleman's and ladies' agreement that we wouldn't be dealing with this outside some major major policy change. Which
well,
really
the only
happened.
Court decision was basically on the first page, lines 3 through 5. That satisfies the court decision. All this other stuff deals specifically with prevailing wage.
All this other stuff
disaster
is
areas.
One player in a big industry no different than telecommunications. This is precisely like, and I don't want to insult in any way any interest, I'm just using him as an example. This is, would be precisely like dealing with the telecommunications bill and saying, we've got to get this bill done for cable. Be laughed out of the room. It's fine to bring that bill to the floor and discuss those issues and discuss, well, maybe cable's right, maybe cable's wrong, maybe AT&T, maybe Verizon's, but to actually bring a bill just because one player in a huge industry. Senator, this is precisely the same. What you see in this bill is one person's perspective. And by the way, I want the body to know, this bill is not reflective of any agreement or anything that was even brought up by a majority of people in the negotiations we had.
In your years of experience in the Senate, both serving with the gentlemen that and ladies that have been here a long time and had great institutional knowledge of this place, do you see this place trending into a place where one interest group is starting to get their issues?
Instead, I think there's probably
instead
always...
of that process that you've articulated, where in the past you try to get all groups together to work out some type of compromise, because that's the way I see this place going, unfortunately.
Senator, I think that is not a new phenomenon to government, to the Capitol. I think it's probably more common, probably when our party was in charge, there were interest groups that had far more influence.
I can tell you, I served 4 years in the majority in the House. I served 2 years in the minority in the House. I hated all 6 years I served in the House. I don't like the way that place operated. I didn't like the partisanship of it. I thought it wasn't representative of the people that we all represent, because we represent people of both parties. What I've always heard about this chamber and what I've found to be true is this is the place where common sense dominates, where compromise dominates. And I've seen in my short 6 years kind of it's being chipped away a little bit, where two senators or a bunch of senators, if they want to sit out here and talk to their blue in the face, that's the right. You know, the constant threat of a PQ to me is a scary thing for this chamber, because when I first got to the House, there was 22 Democrats in the Senate, and within 10 years that changed, and now there's 26 Republicans in the Senate. So what the majority party needs to be wary of is that can change overnight, and it's not good for either side to go down that path of using that procedural move. You know, the reason that move was used, and I have a little bit of historical perspective from my father. By the way, those two letters were never allowed to be used in front of him when he was the president pro tem. He thinks it's disgraceful to use the previous question in the Senate. The reason it was used was former senator, you probably know the story, Jet Banks, offered an amendment, and then what did he do? He jumped in his car and started driving to St. Louis, and the Senate couldn't do anything because he had the floor.
Right.
They could move on to other business. They could adjourn for the day.
Right.
Thank you. But they were stuck. Previous question, that should be used in a case like that. I'll be quite frank about it. But when senators are here on the floor engaged in debate, should never be used. My opinion, I know I got off
on the
soapbox, but...
Well, and you've heard me talk this way a great deal, but where do you stop?
I mean, tax credit reform last year.
This discussion surrounding prevailing wage, and I try to tell some of my colleagues, do your constituents per se really even know what prevailing wage is?
No.
I mean, do they sit around their breakfast table and say, oh, I'm so happy the state legislature addressed prevailing wage?
I do know the voters think people ought to be paid a decent wage. That we know.
What's that?
We do know that voters think that people ought to be paid a decent wage. Look at any of the ballot issues that have been out there.
Well,
overwhelming support statewide.
I'm just saying they understand those things, pensions and all that. They don't understand this. I mean, I always ask people, well, won't you have to, if this is an accomplishment that you've changed prevailing wage, and you've made it easier for, in my view, don't you have to go back to your constituents and explain what prevailing wage is to begin with?
I haven't seen that on any campaign material.
Now, I'm reluctant to bring this up with you, but a House member came by to see me a couple weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
And he had a brilliant idea for a bill. and I won't say what it was, and it involved Jackson County. And I like the guy, and he's a friendly guy, and I just said, look, you know, why? And he really couldn't answer that question. And then I'm like going, okay, well, you know, before you do this, you might, won't you have to, you know, like, explain to the people why it's important to them? I mean, won't you first have to explain what it is?
Right.
You know? And we have this, I have this bill that, you know, there's an old problem in local government, as you know, between counties and cities. Land bank, right? Those issues, land trust. In Jackson County, it's messed up. It's messed up in urban areas. So in Michigan, I forget the, I think it's Genevieve County with Flint, Michigan. They have a lot of experience in this. So the city of Kansas City said, look, land bank has had some problems in St. Louis. We want to avoid those, but we want to set up something other than land trust. So anyway, people in the House come over and they're like, oh, you know, the land bank bill is over in the Senate. I don't know what's going to happen. I go, okay, let me ask you a question. If you're running for political office, would you really put this in your brochure?
Right.
And if you did, would you not have to explain to taxpayers what land bank is, and then B, have a whole other paragraph explaining how it is relevant to them?
You'd probably be able to knock on about six doors that day.
Well, I'm just saying, I've been down here a long time, and I've never heard anybody beyond a group aggrieved property owner occasionally at an auction even bring up land trust or land bank. But I'm just saying, okay, let's get back to prevailing wage. It's the same thing. I don't go back home and hear people say, oh, this prevailing wage. I mean, I hear people say, you know, talk about being part of the middle class. By the way, I want to make it clear, and I've said this, you commented on this. There was a rally out front, and you made comment that I may have offended some of the preposterous egos of business managers who work for unions, which I'm actually sometimes in my last 19 days very delighted to do that. Well, one thing that I irritated some of my partisan colleagues was I introduced and thanked my colleague, the senator from the first, for his support, which agitated many of the partisan members of the other body who all jumped up and bounded over to me.
I don't know if I shared with you what some people have said to me, but you know what,
I informed them that he was people who have worked hard deserve to be thanked. Well, let me get back to the other thing you brought up. As I was, if you remember when I was speaking, not that anyone was listening to my speech out there, but I did make reference to, it was the rank and file were there, and I said, really, when I'm up on the Senate floor like today, I think of all the stories of people I know, real people. They're not a business manager. They're not the head of a union. They're the people that belong to a union that might even disagree with the union's politics.
That's the only reason I stand up here, Senator.
I know, and I'm just saying that's, look, and we have a bill that sort of, in a legislatively reckless way, does away with six decades of how we've built things, and in my mind, obliterates all those stories.
You know, when you talk about the rank and file people, I'm remembering one of the last things I did before I was elected. When I won my primary election, I was working on the page extension, and my job and another guy that was probably in his mid-30s and a guy that was 59 years old, our job was to crawl down 40 feet in columns, you know, that they had the steel around the columns, the rebar in there. We'd crawl 40 feet down, we'd have a vibrator and we'd have a concrete chute, and you just get beaten. And this is in July, late July, August, it's 100 degrees. And I think of Oscar, the guy that for the last 35 years had been doing that every day. And he got paid well for that. He should get paid well for that. It's dangerous. It's hard work.
Well, I wanted to tell you, in my, look, you out here on the floor, in the political context that we live in, you hear this term union, you hear that. People say, well, he's up because of da-da-da-da-da-da. No, really, I'm up because of, I know so many people back home who came back from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, And they were able to join the middle class because they learned a trade. And they learned a trade.
And they didn't have a high school education.
Yeah. That they couldn't afford college, or they did a little bit of college. It didn't work in their lives. And at no cost to me, the contractor and the employee group paid for their training. And then that guy, man or woman, worked and paid for the next generation of people being trained, called apprentices. And the state didn't have to pay for all that.
Right.
You know, we have a community college system. We have Lynn Technical College. We have things that I fully understand the state has to make an investment in job training. In the construction industry, you don't.
Right.
And that's what people don't realize. And it frustrates me that we recognize with one hand that we can't have teachers in rural Missouri making $6,000 a year, because if we based it on the taxes, the local taxes, that might well happen. We recognize as a state, because we're all in this together, that there are differences between rural and suburban and urban, and different challenges and different things, but we're all one state, that we recognize the state should intervene in educational matters. And quite frankly, take some tax money from the suburbs, from the senator from 13th, from the senator from 15th, from the senator from 24th, from the senator from the 4th district, and yours, and make it fair. Because we recognize that child in rural Missouri, we dealt with that all that yesterday, that teacher, if we just left it to no intervention by us, and I'm talking about us, might make $7,000 a year. May not even be able to provide a teacher. So it's just interesting that all that, I will never be surprised in this building about how, with one hand, one week we do one thing, and then with the other hand, we do something totally opposite. You know?
Right.
Insurance mandates are bad. Insurance mandates are good when it comes to one thing.
Right.
And I, look, I like mandates of insurance mandates, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know, when it comes to kids with autism, yeah, I'm all for
companies to come to Missouri and pay a high wage and have health insurance,
But I recognize there's a balance, and I recognize you can't do that on every, but the point is, you those are all decisions you make. But if you're doing it with one hand, be aware of what the other hand does. Don't put this pea in the shell and forget where you put the pea in the shell. I mean, don't do this magical hide the pea and forget where you put it, because that's what we do around here sometimes. One week we do one thing, the next week we do the total opposite. One week we do something, then the next week we undo what we just got done doing in another way. And this bill sort of reminds me of it. We're in a very difficult budget process. I'm sure the senator from 13th and other people had to make all of these difficult decisions about the job training programs of the state. But I will bet you, as you know from your own life, nobody had to sit there and talk about the construction industry, because they don't use the community college system. They don't use the Lynn Technical Hall. They provide it themselves. It's an agreement. You know, it's actually something almost, I don't know if you...
All they do is generate tax dollars.
Right.
That's...
And then it gets me back to that contractor that I well remember at one of these meetings saying, why am I down here as a member of the Republican Party complaining to the members of my own party in the legislature about, you know, he goes, I'm a Republican. I'm doing everything right.
Right.
And I have to come down there to defend that. I choose because I have experience and my family has experience in this business. I would prefer to have employees that have job training, that have safety training, that I'm willing to pay for, not the taxpayer.
Have drug
testing. I would like them to have drug testing. I would like them to have, I pay my workers' comp insurance. I pay my local taxes. I support my school district. I want my employees to make a wage so they can live in the middle class, or, you know, based on their hard work, whatever they determine that to be. And I'm doing everything right, but I have to come to my own legislature and
and say, please leave me alone.
Right.
And it's because we then get back to an industry where one sector is complaining about the business model of the larger sector, the urban sector, the suburban sector. What? And in that discussion, it's led to a lot of that room saying, you want to solve this if there really is a problem? Well, no, if you really want to fight to pay people less of your own constituents, who last night were the parents of the school kids we were defending, but today they're greedy holders of pensions.
Do you want to walk through your amendment?
Uh-huh.
I was trying to read that while you were talking, but...
The senator from 13th pending amendment,
right,
he requires as a condition to be eligible to bid that you've submitted the wage survey. By the way, I don't know if you remember this, but one of the contractors said, you really don't need the state legislature to be bothered with this. If you want to solve it overnight, I believe it was the gentleman from St. Louis, NECA, said, if you don't want, we don't need a state law. If these school districts and other, before they bid,
yeah, put it in their
to avoid specs. A situation like they faced in Joplin, make it as part of the bid specs.
Right.
Just like hopefully you do with bonding, just like hopefully you do with paying your taxes, just like hopefully you do with some of those other things.
So you're keeping the language of the senator from the 13th?
I'm keeping his language.
290,
the problem with his amendment is
259.
His amendment then leaves that goofy thing from the federal government to where we use, I was trying to think.
So you struck.
You're trying to use that thing that was kept on Funk and Wagnall's porch since noon today as the basis for designing prevailing wage, the old Johnny Carson routine. It was on, you know, answer is.
Carson Kreskin?
No, that was Carson.
Oh, Carnac.
Carnac the Great. Yeah. And he had it's been kept on Funk and Wagnall's porch since noon today, and he'd do this thing. Well, in this bill now, we have a thing where survey says, answer is, and, you know, look, I heard everybody running around the last time I talked about it and said, oh, he's wrong. Look, I have what was distributed, and it says as part of this survey, we have the Virgin Islands, Guam, and other things. I'm just saying if you want to have an honest adult discussion about what the senator from Third brought up, fairness, don't come up with this.
Right.
I mean, genuinely recognize that.
So you're leaving everything from the senator from the 13th, then. You're taking out the brackets on page 2, and then you're deleting all of the bold on page 2 and 3.
Right. Are you on the... Are you inquiring of me? I forgot the status.
Yes.
I think you are. Well, actually, I did notice I have probably an amendment that I need to my amendment because I notice in the bill that there's an inquiry. So...
want me to end my inquiry?
End your inquiry.
Senator, thank you. It's always enlightening to talk to you, and not to be sentimental, the Senate's going to miss you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President. President.
The Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, do you yield?
I yield, Mr. President, despite your bad call.
Proceed, Senator from the 13th.
Next to somebody for so long.
Well, I said first, and he just deliberately ignored me. He does that. And then he went to you, and there was that little impish grin
he ignored me. The only picture I think I would like when I leave the Senate is the picture of the two of you at the Missouri basketball game in your different sweatsuit attires. That is the only picture I want.
Well, but you missed the later coat drama. I had forgotten where I left my coat. So the senator from Johnson was quite agitated that night because he was driving, and I had my coat.
and I had forgotten where I had left it because we had socially bounced from suite to suite. So there was a mini drama as everyone was leaving of me running from suite to suite. And then I realized that the MU curator suite, which is where I left it, there was a hidden closet that I had forgotten. That's where I put it. And of course, as always, it was the last place I looked.
Senator, the reason I wanted to inquire, because you had talked about putting
it. And so then I have my coat, and I am greeted by a jovial senator from Johnson who realizes that he can leave, until it set in as we were in his car that he was trapped in his car for 30 minutes with me on the way back.
I've never seen him. He is such a polite man. He probably enjoyed that ride. Senator, the reason I wanted to be recognized is you had talked about you have an amendment to your substitute amendment. I have an amendment to it as well.
Okay.
And that's why I wanted to rise. And the reason I have an amendment to your substitute amendment is my original bill dealt with mandatory reporting. Since that time, I have worked on that amendment. And you were recognized first. You did the substitute.
Right.
So what my amendment will do is amend your substitute to put that language on the mandatory reporting that I had changed. So then a substitute takes the place of mine. So if yours was passed, the cleanup language on the mandatory reporting would be on yours, and that would be the one that would pass, and mine would go wayside.
Well,
if I do not do this amendment and your amendment was to pass, the language I do not want would be the language. So this is my only opportunity to get this language.
Senator, it's not totally your. I want to make you aware of another part of the bill that I don't know if we can do separately an amendment later, but here's what my Senate amendment to my substitute amendment. When I was looking through the bill, if you notice, if the amendment is adopted, do we really want to leave that reference to locality that's in the bill? And so my amendment was to strike that.
That would not be a problem, because after my amendment was adopted, you could offer yours still, because I am not dealing with your new language. I am dealing with my language portion.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I know we can have multiple. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we weren't. I didn't assume we were probably even anywhere close to locking each other out, but I wanted to make you aware. And
I didn't get a
chance. If you want to deal with your amendment separately, that's one thing. You know, as a suggestion, you could also deal with this issue. But let's get back to that point. There would be no point to have this reference to locality if you have mandatory reporting, is my point.
Okay.
And your original amendment, you have this requirement, but as I kind of discussed with you, the problem is, the reason I did my substitute amendment is you left the other parts of his bill.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where you wouldn't want mandatory reporting and then adopt this, you know, goofy Carnac the Great system of determining wages that is on a federal website that they say don't use.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and offer this amendment. Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
Can I inquire the Senator from St. Francis?
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
There's nothing brief about it, okay?
Well, since I can refuse to yield, and since the barbecue ribs in my room are just about ready, it's going to be a short inquiry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I want to put things in perspective before I introduce this amendment, okay? You had stated in your inquiry of the senator from the 11th,
yes,
something needs to be done.
Correct.
And in every process, and you have handled legislation, you work to accomplish that goal. Now, the senator from Jefferson, the senator from the 11th, and myself have sat in on 5 different meetings. We have excluded any labor officials and brought nothing but the industry into those meetings. The industry in those meetings, every time when we narrowed them down, said, you keep bringing up the issue of 68% of the wage rates determined in the different counties and the different occupational titles are determined by a collective bargaining agreement wage rate. So all the contractors have said, then do some type of mandatory reporting so we can get those wage rates more accurate. That's what the industry is telling us. And I have the number of contractors whose letters have been submitted that are very frustrated they're not being listened to. Okay? So I have an amendment to proceed with trying to do this because the idea brought forth in the negotiations was not brought forth in the substitute. So when we sit here and say we need to sit down in meetings and work things out, I want to let you know I'm trying to do what the industry has brought forth to do, to try to get a resolution, one that would pass the House, one that would pass the Senate, and one that would have the possibility of the governor signing. So when we get up on this floor and get frustrated over 8 years, 8 years we thought the issue was dealt with, and we say here's something to do, we're trying. And I want to make clear you're aware of the fact that we're trying.
Here's the thing. Could you point out one of those contractors that is domiciled in Carter, Reynolds, or Iron County?
They do work. Several of these letters are from contractors that do work on the eastern side of the state, so they probably do work, but I don't know in Carter if it doesn't happen.
That's one of the problems. We've got several counties out there. There's no work being done, and on the rare occasion, once every 3 years, that there's work being done, we have to come up with a proper method of setting the wages.
What I'm trying to do is start from square one, get something going that will work, and then just like anything else, if it's not working, the senator from the 11th, the senator from the 13th, and the senator from St. Francis will not be here. And someone else says, that idea is not working. It's something we do all the time. Let's proceed. But everyone gets frustrated.
I stepped out of here, and I talked to two people outside that know this thing, and both of them said the same thing. There is a solution that could be done. There is something here, and I don't know which side we need to lean forward, and I'll listen to your message.
Senator,
just reporting electronically won't do any good for my county that my barbecue is from because they haven't had anything built there. Okay. And so you can file it electronically all you want. First, most of that area doesn't even have internet. Second, there hasn't been anything built there. But when they do have a school built there in the next 2 or 3 years, somebody's got to come up with some wages. Well, if there's been no wages had, none reported, even if you report them electronically, that presents a problem.
One of the things we have to start from square one is getting to a goal that you...
Mr. President.
3 senators standing on the floor.
Would you lay the bill over on the informal calendar?
The bill will be laid over on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Seeing no objections, announcements. 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 Senator from the 23rd.
Got it. David does.
Mr. President, without the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees.
Senate is on the order of business of standing committees. Senator from Johnson, who is the esteemed chairman of the Education Committee, is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report from your hardworking Education Committee.
Thank you, Senator. Please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Education, to which was referred Senate Bill 454, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Pierce, Chairman.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 23rd that the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this afternoon. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The Senate shall stand in recess until 3 p.m. this afternoon.